Hello and welcome again to another episode of Sacktown Talks. Today we have a special guest joining us, Senator Scott Wiener from San Francisco. Scott, how's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You know, it's been about a year since you joined us last year, and you know, a lot has happened. We talked a lot about kind of your district and the city. Kind of how has the city been doing in the last year, kind of rebounding from COVID-19?
It's been a roller coaster, as for the entire world. I mean, it's such a hard year and a half for so many people, and we've had to really pivot and just really make sure we're helping our communities during this terrible time. And then we thought we were finally like rounding a corner, and here we are back in a bad situation with Delta, but. The good thing is, because of the vaccines, we can at least protect our hospitals if we can just get people vaccinated. So we still have a path out. We just have to take it.
You know, San Francisco is such a tourist destination. I think it's like the number one tourist destination in the world, or at least in the U.S. kind of. Have you guys seen tourism rebound? And with that, have you seen kind of the small businesses kind of bounce back with that yet?
I mean, we've seen increases in tourism in San Francisco for sure, but not as much as we need or would like. And in particular, we have domestic tourism and European, but we have a lot of tourism from Asia. And Asia has been so challenged recently. And so we've, that's really suffered a lot. So we do have partial rebound, but not to where we need it to be. And, our small businesses are definitely still struggling. And we've had real success with outdoor dining for our bars and restaurants. And that's working well. But overall, there's still a lot of struggles.
Yeah. Last year, when you came on, you talked about a lot of kind of longtime bars and kind of restaurants that were suffering and threatened of closing because they couldn't pay the rent, they couldn't open. Are you seeing these businesses being able to open back up and survive, or are there a lot of still shuttered businesses?
I mean, we've lost bars and restaurants for sure, but a lot of them have survived because of the outdoor service that they're allowed to do. And that's why we're also pursuing legislation in Sacramento to try to make sure that we don't get in the way of cities being able to do this. So the numbers of restaurants and bars that have been able to survive has been really heartening. But it's still hard because with Delta, we've seen people have been very reluctant to do indoor dining, which was happening for a few months. And in general, even if you don't do a lockdown, when you're in this kind of situation, there's a certain percentage of people who are just going to naturally stay home and don't want to go out very much. So we got to get these numbers down, reduce the community spread, continue to vaccinate people so that we can get things turned around.
Yeah, well said, well said. Since you've come into the legislature the past few years, you've been at the forefront of the housing crisis and try to kind of push kind of the state forward on building more housing, building it kind of closer to transit. And, this year you've been working on your own ledge package. Can you kind of tell us kind of what you're working on this year in the housing space and kind of how you think it's going to help the problem?
Sure. I have three housing bills this year. Senate Bill 10, which just passed the Assembly yesterday, which gives cities a new tool to much more quickly and efficiently rezone for small multi-unit housing up to 10 units. We have Senate Bill 478 that sort of cracks down on some abusive practices that some cities use to make it impossible for people to build multi-unit even when it's allowed under zoning. And then we have SB 477, which increases data collection. So we have a few bills in our package.
I guess since you came in, what was your first housing bill? Was it like SB 35?
Yeah.
Was that it? And kind of, it was seen as like, such a earth shattering, changing bill. And I believe that didn't get through. Is that right? And I guess, have you seen attitudes towards housing change, and kind of, you know, I guess, how is your mentality in trying to, you know, deal with this and kind of, you know, coming back every year and, you know, trying to find the right mix of what's going to work?
I think in the general public, we've seen a lot of positive changes in terms of attitudes towards more housing. The public gets it. Voters get it. The polling is like clear. People understand we need more housing. People understand that you can mix apartment buildings and single family homes in a neighborhood and it's just fine. It's not the end of the world. But politically, the anti-housing forces, the NIMBYs, have become very organized locally and statewide, and they're very loud and insistent, and they show up and they paint a false picture that they are somehow the majority when they're not even close to the majority. But for elected officials, sometimes when you hear, you know, when you have that sort of imbalance, it creates a perception that, oh, this is what my constituents think, even though the people who are yelling and screaming and demanding that you oppose housing bills are not a majority, but it creates a sort of political dysfunction.
It's kind of interesting because, you know, kind of looking at your bills of the past that haven't worked out, they've all seemed, you know, in retrospect to be kind of reasonable additions, you know, making apartment buildings that already exist taller, putting housing and transportation close together. You know, have you seen attitudes on those issues, you know, change over, you know, these past 3 or 4 months or 3 or 4 years, or is it still the same?
Yeah. I mean, it's really the one bill. It's you know, SB 50 that didn't pass, but I think SB 50 opened the door to a number of other zoning reform bills and allowed some other bills to pass that might not have passed. So I think that bill was just sort of a blockbuster, big bill. I wish we could have passed it, but I think it opened the door to a lot of other bills. So yeah, I think we've seen more legislators who have been willing to vote for these bills, but it's still hard. Right. These bills are still all really hard.
You know, with COVID-19, you know, there's a lot of talk of people moving around, people kind of seeking more single family homes versus apartment complexes, and kind of people living more urban areas. Kind of, I guess, in your district, have you seen that? Have you seen, you know, I guess a reset of the real estate market, or do you believe that, you know, there's still growing demand in kind of these areas?
Yeah, I think it's a narrative that's not really accurate. I mean, yeah, do people move around? Yes. But in San Francisco, you know, we lost some population during the pandemic, but we're starting to get it back. People are moving into the city. Rents are starting to go up again. So people, you know, this whole narrative that everyone wants to live on a mountaintop somewhere, it was never true. It's just false. There are always people who live in cities who decided they want to move out to the suburbs. They want a single family home, and that's fine. If they can afford it, and they want to live in a suburban context, good for them. They can make that choice. But there are also plenty of people who want to live in cities, and who, you know, it's the life that they want. They understand it's more environmentally sustainable.
Another area that you're always at the forefront is kind of the substances. Kind of what are you working on this year in kind of the illegal substance space, and kind of why is this an area that interests you?
I mean, drug policy and addiction treatment is always a high priority for me because it's a huge problem in society. I mean, in San Francisco, but everywhere. Increase addiction around meth and heroin, fentanyl, and, you know, the war on drugs has been a complete failure. The idea that you can just mass arrest and lock people up for using drugs and people are going to stop using is false. People, you know, just as many or more people are using drugs now as before, as when the war on drugs started 50 years ago. We have still have a lot of addiction, a lot of overdoses and deaths. Mm-hmm. And so we need to move away from a punitive incarceration model to try to address drug use and addiction and overdoses and view this for what it is, a health issue. And so, yes, we're trying on a criminal justice front to, you know, push forward the notion that we should be not arresting people for using drugs. So we have legislation this year to decriminalize the possession and use of psychedelic drugs as a step towards drug decriminalization. But we also are trying to come up with new models of how do we help people get treatment and treat it as a health issue. So legislation to legalize safe consumption sites in California, which have been legal in other countries for many years, that end up, you know, helping people get into recovery and be healthier. Legislation to expand treatment options for people who are addicted to meth, our contingency management bill, giving people financial incentives to stay sober and get off of meth. So yeah, we're just trying different approaches from a health perspective for drug use, addiction, overdoses, instead of the failed incarceration arrest model.
Right. And I guess politically, you know, how is this advancing and how are, I guess, the other members kind of taking this?
We're getting reasonable support. I mean, our psychedelics bill has passed the Senate and has passed two policy committees in the Assembly. It's, you know, they've been tough votes. They're not landslides, but we're moving it forward. Our safe consumption site bill passed the Senate and it got made a two-year bill in the Assembly, but I think we'll be able to move it forward next year. Our meth contingency management bill got unanimous bipartisan support in the Senate and has been getting the same in the Assembly so far. So, you know, I think we're making good progress.
Yeah. You know, another area that you've kind of been on the forefront is kind of like the advancement of kind of the alcohol in California and kind of, you know, trying to push forward the hours of operation, kind of, you know, where, you know, open containers on the streets and stuff like that. Kind of what are you doing this year in terms of, you know, kind of alcohol use and kind of where it can be?
Yeah, I mean, California, you know, there are some areas of alcohol policy where we're a little outdated. Laws are passed 80, 100, 110 years ago that may not make sense anymore. And so during the pandemic, with the advent of outdoor dining, which not only saved so many small businesses, but really showed people how we could use our streets differently. And I think people really like outdoor dining, and we want to empower our cities to be able to continue it. And there are cities that want to make it permanent, but there are some state alcohol laws that make it more challenging. And so we have legislation, SB 314. We're working with Assemblymember Jesse Gabriel, who has a companion bill in the Assembly, to really sort of extend the ability of cities and restaurants to do that outdoor dining, and so that it won't end when the state of emergency ends, and to allow ABC to extend to make those permits permanent. So, you know, we're trying to just get out of the way and let cities facilitate this process.
You know, I guess what's been, I guess, one of your biggest surprises, you know, kind of as you mentioned, you know, we have these really old laws on the book and, you know, 4 years ago when you came in, you know, you had a lot of great ideas and you advanced them forward. I guess, what are some of the biggest surprises, some of the resistance you've seen to kind of changing some of these old laws?
Alcohol laws?
Or any housing, alcohol, kind of some of the stuff.
Oh, no, I think in general, you know, whether it's alcohol or housing, people get used to a certain way of the way things are supposed to be. And sometimes it's hard for people's, to open people's minds to consider there might be other ways of doing it. And so on just like using our streets for things other than cars, the pandemic has shown people, okay, when you close some streets off here and there to cars and focus them on pedestrians and cyclists, et cetera, it's a good thing that, you know, again, the world doesn't end, the sky doesn't fall. Right. And so people have been able to see also with outdoor dining at this level, I think people may not have been able to envision before what it would have been like. And now they see, and they see that it's good. So I think a lot of times if you just show people a lot of times people will realize, okay, the perception I had may not have been totally accurate, but the challenge is getting there to be able to show them. The pandemic allowed us to show people what alternative use of our streets is like, and people liked it. But it shouldn't take a global pandemic to be able to do that.
Yeah. You know, here we are coming into the end of session. It's suspense week. Kind of what bills do you have on suspense, and kind of what's going to be occupying your time here in the next 3 weeks?
I have 10 bills on suspense, and you know, obviously our psychedelics bill is our hardest bill, and so I'm hoping that comes off, but who knows. You know, and I don't know, I'll see which bills come off. It's always hard to say.
Yeah, that's always one of the funniest parts of suspense is, you know, you even as a member, you don't know which bills are going to come off or on. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean assembly member Gonzalez is she's a very transparent person, so we all meet. You know, I have my meeting with her, and she's always and quite transparent about questions she has or concerns and so forth, which I appreciate, because that gives me an opportunity to, as the author, to respond or provide clarification or to express openness to amendments. But in the end, yeah, something you just don't, you're always going to lose some bills on suspense in both houses. It's a part of the process I don't love, right. But it is what it is. It's a process we have. And so, you know, it's, yeah, you just know there are going to be some bills you lose, and sometimes there's maybe not a real reason, for it, but it is what it is. And sometimes you just reintroduce the bill the next year. It can take a few tries.
All right. What are some other bills, I guess, we haven't talked about that, you're working on here at the end of session to get?
Well, we have legislation to end mandatory minimum jail sentences for nonviolent drug offenses, to give judges more discretion to put people on probation if they think it's appropriate. SB 73, or legislation to repeal the crime of loitering with intent to commit prostitution, sometimes referred to as the walking while trans law, where an officer can arrest someone based on how they're dressed or wearing their hair or wearing high heels, even if they haven't done anything. It's a very terrible law. We have our bill to end toxicity testing on dogs and cats in most situations, working with the Humane Society on that bill. We have what else? Legislation to legislation to make sure that health plans are not preventing people from accessing mental health and addiction treatment, and that people get timely access to mental health care. So yeah, those are some of our bills.
And then, you know, the state budget process, you know, just ended, but, you know, as you know, it's always ongoing till the end of session. Kind of what some of the things that you were able to achieve for your district in the budget this year?
Yeah, we were able to get quite a few investments, some good investments in our park system in San Francisco and some public plazas. We got a bunch of good investments in some of our food safety net programs in the community. Investment in our in Chinatown. There's a program for artists doing work around anti-AAPI hate. So we got some investment there. We were able to fund a meth sobering center in San Francisco. Able to fund the LGBTQ International Music Center that's been created by our San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus. So we got some really good local district investments this year.
Yeah. You know, I know one space you've been working on in the past is kind of like these like kind of crimes in San Francisco, like breaking windows and things like that. You know, some of the things we're seeing on the news is kind of people shoplifting in San Francisco and things like that. Is this something that the media is over-sensationalizing, or is this something that's kind of really a problem in the city right now?
Well, it's not just San Francisco, it's elsewhere, but it's a problem in San Francisco, the sort of organized crime shoplifting rings. It is, it's very real. And it's, you know, it's a problem, problem for our retailers. And I know that our police and district attorney and mayor are taking it very seriously. They've made quite a few arrests. You know, back when we were having a few years back, an explosion of auto break-ins, also largely organized crime, our police department employed some new techniques that they were able to make quite a few arrests. And while auto break-ins are still a problem in San Francisco, it's not accelerating like it was a few years back. So I'm hopeful that they'll be able to put a, not end immigrant and shoplifting, but at least really stop this explosion, because it is a real problem.
Interesting. And kind of, you know, in closing, kind of, you know, three more weeks left. It's kind of been a crazy year with the recall election and everything. Kind of, I guess, how are you seeing these last 3 weeks going down, and kind of what are you most looking forward to after session?
I'm hoping we have a much smoother end of session. We had some really unfortunate tensions between the Senate and the Assembly at the end of session last year. I have a real strong sense that both houses are working very hard to avoid that this year. There's a much different energy in terms of the two houses working well together, and I think there's a desire to be mutually supportive, which is good, because there's no, you know, there's always inherent tension between two houses, but ultimately we're elected by the same people, we're all colleagues, and so I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't want to predict anything, but cautiously optimistic we will have a smoother end of session between the two houses. But you know, there's always going to be some turbulence at the end of session. Right. Fortunately, because we're in year one, we don't have that hard midnight stop like we do at the end of year two, which caused some problems last year between two houses and with the tension we had within the Senate between our Democratic and Republican caucuses. There was just a lot happening last year that I really hope we avoid this year, and I'm have a sense that we have the possibility of avoiding it.
Yeah, that's crazy. I guess these last two sessions, the end of session, have just been really crazy with, you know, the blood cup throwing and then the COVID issues last year. Yeah, normal end of session would be welcome.
It would be.
And then anything you're looking forward to doing at, you know, after session closes? Any plans?
I may do some travel in the fall, but I'm going to generally just be around and just look forward to, you know, spending some time at home.
Awesome.
In the community.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. And we wish you the best on Suspense Week, and hopefully you get your bills out.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Scott. Bye. Some are called dreamers.